Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Senate Judiciary Committee, and I'd like to describe that testimony for you and then ask your reaction to that testimony. And I will begin by saying that senator after senator on the Judiciary Committee invoked your leadership on the issue of drones and asked Attorney General Holder about the standards for drone strikes in the United States. And indeed, although you do not serve on the Judiciary Committee, it was as if you were serving in absentia because the Attorney General was forced over and over again to respond And I would note that you're standing here today like a modern Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Must surely be making Jimmy Stewart smile. And my only regret is that there are not 99 of your colleagues here today standing with you in defense of the most fundamental principle in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, namely that each of us is endowed with certain unalienable rights by our Creator, and that first among them is life. The right to life and the right not to have life arbitrarily extinguished by our government without due process of law.
President.
The Senator from Kentucky.
I rise today to begin to filibuster John Brennan's nomination for the CIA. I will speak until I can no longer speak. I will speak as long as it takes until the alarm is sounded from coast to coast that our Constitution is important, that your rights to trial by jury are precious, that no American should be killed by a drone on American soil without first being charged with a crime, without first being found to be guilty by a court, that Americans could be killed in a cafe in San Francisco or in a restaurant in Houston or at their home in Bowling Green, Kentucky, is an abomination. It is something that should not and cannot be tolerated in our country. I don't rise to oppose John Brennan's nomination simply for the person. I rise today for the principle. The principle is one that as Americans we have fought long and hard for, and to give up on that principle, to give up on the Bill of Rights, to give up on the Fifth Amendment protection that says that no person shall be held without due process, that no person shall be held for a capital offense without being indicted. This is a precious American tradition and something we should not give up on easily. They say Lewis Carroll is fiction. Alice never fell down a rabbit hole, and the White Queen's caustic judgments are not really a threat to your security. Or has America the Beautiful become Alice's Wonderland? No, no, said the Queen. Sentence first, verdict afterwards. Stuff and nonsense, Alice said loudly. The idea of having the sentence first? Hold your tongue, said the Queen, turning purple. I won't, said Alice. Release the drones, said the Queen, as she shouted at the top of her voice. Lewis Carroll is fiction, right? When I asked the President, can you kill an American on American soil? It should have been an easy answer. It's an easy question. It should have been a resounding and unequivocal no. The President's response, he hasn't killed anyone yet. We're supposed to be comforted by that. The President says, I haven't killed anyone yet. He goes on to say, and I have no intention of killing Americans, but I might. Is that enough? Are we satisfied by that? Are we so complacent with our rights that we would allow a president to say he might kill Americans, but he will judge the circumstances? He will be the sole arbiter. He will be the sole decider. He will be the executioner in chief if he sees fit.
All right, boys and girls, we're about to get on the crazy train and go down the rabbit hole. We'll be broadcasting for the next 12 hours and 52 minutes. Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from what was formerly called Washington, D.C., and is now called Rand Paul Central.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from Houston, Texas, once again. Glad everybody could join us. It's been an exciting week, and we have an even more exciting and interesting week coming up next week with the start of CPAC, which used to be a forum that was important. But fools rush in, and now it's so well attended that it has to appeal to everybody, and it sucks. But so, Rex, what's on the agenda for us today?
Well, the agenda was CPAC, contenders, pretenders, and conservatives. But sometime between the signing up and scheduling for CPAC and this broadcast, the junior senator from Kentucky took to the floor of the Senate and filibustered for nearly 13 hours in a Jimmy Stewart-esque fashion. And now we've got an escalation in the so-called Republican Civil War because some of his colleagues tried to tag onto his coattails. Some of them were genuinely supportive, and others have been less than happy about it. So we're going to kind of talk about that in the broader context of what is going on in conservatism and specifically with the current, although seemingly dead, standard bearer of conservatism, the Republican Party. A couple of points. We're not really going to play too much of Rand Paul's excellent filibuster. I strongly recommend everybody check it out. It is the most compelling 13 hours on C-SPAN since Newt Gingrich would take to the floor supporting Reagan's initiatives back in the 80s. If you're interested in looking at it, I believe it's on Senator Paul's page. You can also find it in the Texan Rex Liberty Militia. So just join us, and you can find a link to it from our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show. And if you like that page, you will receive notifications of when we are broadcasting, should we have need to broadcast at some other time than our standard time, which is now 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Sunday evenings. And also, if you're in Blog Talk Radio, just click follow the show below the icon, and you will get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile as well as your affiliated email. And we appreciate everybody who has helped us grow the show, posting it in various Facebook groups and tweeting it out and letting other people know about it. If you like what you hear, please share it. You can download any of our archives or listen to them in your browser. Just right-click on the download link, and you will get an MP3 that you can email or that you can burn onto a CD and give to somebody or hand out at rallies or whatever, because the whole point is if you don't want a replay of what happened in 2008 and 2012, then you better get active now. And if you want a better replay of what happened in 2010, the time is now. We have elections coming up, and if you don't support conservatives and you don't start getting along, whether you're a Reagan conservative, Gingrich conservative, quote, libertarian, Ron Paul Republican, whatever, if y'all don't learn how to get along and start working together, it is going to be Obama's century. And that is about the worst thing I can possibly imagine. So, Tex, as we're going to kind of talk about CPAC and what Dr. Paul did, just want to kind of see your thoughts on the filibuster, which I think is something that has been used as a political ploy in the past. But to me, Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee were using it as a tool to promote what shouldn't even be a debate, the U.S. Constitution. That's supposed to be the thing that we can all agree upon and then bicker about the finer details. But it seems that we have to have a question posed to the Justice Department and the President: do you have any intention to kill Americans on American soil without due process of law who are not at that moment engaged in a violent crime or combat activity? I mean, can you believe that we're having this conversation?
Well, what's really incredible is the few number of senators who joined in the filibuster. Most of them were across town trying to show Barack Obama how much they were ready to be led, and no one was standing up for our constitutional rights except Rand Paul. And, you know, this is something that should have had, I think, broad bipartisan support, because remember, it was the Democrat Party that was against the Patriot Act. When the Patriot Act came in, well, of course, a lot of them signed on to it, but there was a lot of concern about Homeland Security and you know, the growth of sort of a domestic security apparatus and all this kind of stuff. Okay, well, great. So part of that is drones and the use of drones here at home. And what are those drones going to do? Well, can they take out American citizens? And so what they're saying is, well, you know, if there's a imminent threat, you know, a guy's got a bomb, 12 minutes, he's going to detonate the thing. You know, I think any reasonable person might say, okay, you know, there you have an imminent threat, someone with who's clearly intending to do harm. I assume you have intelligence that tells you that these things are going to happen, and, you know, therefore the government is duty-bound to protect American citizens and take that person out by whatever means is necessary. But then it comes down to, okay, what if a guy says some things that you don't like and he happens to be, you know, sitting at a Starbucks or something, you know, take him out? Well, it seems absurd. Of course not. But that's not what was said in the testimony. What was said in the testimony was a lot of hemming and hawing and, well, you know, the situations will dictate, you know, because they don't want to be pinned into a box and say that they're never going to do it. Well, wait a minute. You know, I know you're trying to preserve presidential prerogative and never say under any circumstances that you wouldn't do that, but for God's sake, are you saying that you would consider that? You know, that inherently is the problem, because if that's under consideration, then what in the hell is the Constitution? You know, if, oh, this person's saying things I don't like, and now they're out at some, you know, restaurant, some public place, some public area, we've identified them, we're just going to freaking take them out, you know, that's a bad thing. Not that I think this is something imminent or that's going to happen anytime soon, but the fact that the government won't tell you no, straight up, like, no, that's insane. We would never do that. That's a problem. Because they're carving out a space where they could do it. And that's why it's bad. And so you go have a filibuster so that you can talk about this issue. And you can just say, look, this type of thing is not something that we as a country are going to accept or that we're prepared to accept. And, you know, this is a red line, a serious red line, and people should pay attention to this. And we should have a national discussion as to whether or not this is acceptable things for our behavior for our government to engage in. And that's what the filibuster was about. And I think it really did raise awareness. And I think a lot of people, even on the left in the Twitter sphere, or the Twitterators, whatever they're called, were generally supportive of what was going on. And I think that the establishment Republicans were upset because that stole their rhino thunder while they were across the street trying to show this broad-based bipartisan support, this love fest, for how great it is and how much they get along with Barack Obama, because once again they've completely misread the election and decided that Romney was too divisive by being an exact carbon copy of Barack Obama. So Romney was too divisive.
Well, not an exact carbon copy. He's a shade lighter.
Yeah, it's sort of like a photographic negative, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
So their thing is, we have to be even closer, more associated with Barack Obama if we ever want to win again. I mean, these guys couldn't get the right answer if it, you know, beat them across the head.
Well, Tex, why didn't they have this sit down with Obama before the sequester? I mean, why did they go out to dinner afterwards? And then here's my other question. I mean, was the White House chef fired because of the sequester? Is that why they couldn't meet in the White House? Or who paid for that dinner? Was it Obama's personal stash, you know, that Obama personal stash, Obama money, or was he using, you know, our money after this sequester thing to take senators out to dinner?
20-car motorcade. Purdy had a 20-car motorcade, and he can't afford to, you know, allow people to tour the White House. That involves guys standing there with microphones in their ear leaning against a wall, right? They can't afford that. Let some school kids go through and, you know, look at the furniture or whatever. But you can afford to go out to this expensive dinner. This is one of those things that they're talking about. Hey, president can't go golfing. You know, we're cutting that out. There's no money for that type of activity anymore.
But dinner at the Jefferson.
Dinner at the Jefferson. He, of course, can do, because that makes us Republicans look good and how bipartisan we are.
By the way, I recommend to anybody, if you're in town, if you're in D.C. for any events, Jefferson's a pretty good place to get a bite. It's also a good place to stay. Old Ebbitt Grill is also a good spot. And these are all the places that all the congressional critters hang out, too. So, you know, you might bump into one of them, and if it's one you like, shake his hand. And if it's one you don't like, tell him what's what.
And if you bump into them, just make sure they're not injured.
Yeah, it's always good not to injure current office holders. Tex, have you ever done any volunteer work?
Have I ever done any volunteer work? Well, I'm working on this show at the moment.
This isn't volunteer work. We pay for this microphone.
Yes, I have.
Okay. Yeah, obviously this isn't volunteer work because we pay for this. Volunteer work, generally, you don't have to pay for it. You just have to volunteer. How much did you get paid while you were volunteering? Yeah, how much did you get paid while you were volunteering?
Same thing I get paid here.
Oh, okay, so pretty nothing. So then my question is, since the White House tours are put on by volunteers, how does shutting down the tours help save money?
Yeah. You know, that's actually a good question. I really don't know that. I guess they're trying to talk about all the background checks they do on four-year-olds before they let them come to the White House. But no.
Oh, yeah. Dangerous. Those dangerous four-year-olds, they might eat their Pop-Tart in the shape of a gun. I mean, that's just crazy stuff that they do.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, what do you think of my strawberry Pop-Tart, Secret Service guy? Oh, my God. Get on the ground.
I mean, you got to laugh at some of these things because they're so friggin' ridiculous, but this is the state of affairs. I mean, like I said, we're having a senator, okay? This is the most exclusive club in the world. I mean, there's only 100 at a time in the Senate. Now, granted, it was, I think, considerably more exclusive when it was before the 17th Amendment, when these senators were actually representing their states and commonwealths. Now they're basically just congressmen with, you know, extended terms. Which we need to fix, but that's another issue for another day. But, you know, a sitting senator asks a question of an employee of a co-equal branch of government, and Holder thinks that he has the right to avoid answering the question, and then the ridiculousness of the question. Mr. President, do you or do you not have the right to kill Americans on American soil without due process according to the Fifth Amendment? No, he does. I mean, it's not even a question, but I see that this is way bigger. I mean, everybody keeps focusing on drones. Drones are just a tool, man. It's like a gun or a spoon or a screwdriver. It's just a tool used for a purpose. It's the action of what you're doing with this tool. Now, the interesting thing is a drone can only do two things.
I think the government does have the right to kill you with a screwdriver.
Yeah, but not with a drone.
Without a drone.
Yeah.
Drones, I'm worried about.
Yeah, that's
never mind.
Concern.
Sorry, I digress.
That's because of the budget. You know, screwdrivers are much cheaper. Although when the Pentagon buys them, they tend to cost about $40,000. So I don't know. But no, I mean, the crazy thing is that, you know, drones can. It's a remote control airplane, basically, right? So it can only do two things. It can only fly over and take pictures, or fly over and drop a missile. It cannot apprehend, Mirandize, interrogate, assess. It's a hunter killer. It's friggin' Skynet. That's what it is. Okay. If anybody has seen Terminator, it's these floating things that go around hunting humans down. That's what a drone is. Now, is that a bad thing or a good thing? Well, as long as it's not run by Skynet or our enemies, it's fine. It's just a tool. But that tool has people in a remote control center somewhere, you know, moving the joystick, and those people are under orders by the executive branch. The Fifth Amendment is not erased in any of that process. So what we're really talking about is not drones. We're talking about the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution of these United States. We're talking about principles of liberty. We're talking about the Constitution and the fact that Senator Paul and Senator Cruz had to have 13 hours of talk about liberty, the Constitution. I mean, it's the most compelling language heard on the floor of the Senate in decades. And C-SPAN's ratings were through the roof. I think over 1 million tweets were sent out. Stand with Rand was trending on Twitter for a couple of days. It's amazing. Now it's being downplayed as, you know, this is Rand's first salvo in a presidential bid. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. It's a political tool. Maybe.
True. And, you know, just for the benefit of the listeners who may or may not know, or for posterity or history or the general education, the Fifth Amendment says that no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when an actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So that is the Fifth Amendment.
And you read that right out of James Madison's little notebook?
No, he whispered it right in my ear.
Excellent.
Right there. He gave me a thumbs up and a wink, and he was like, good job.
Now, you know, they wrote that amendment, if I'm not mistaken, to the Constitution, obviously, you know, sometime around 1789?
That would be correct.
And the Treaty of Paris was, what, sometime in 1784? So we're talking about within 5 years of an existential war for our existence against the British Crown and the number one army in the world at the time. Is that right?
Yes. You got me, because usually I talk and then I go on mute because there's noise in the background. Yes, Treaty of Paris is 1783. Sorry.
1783. Okay, there you go. So, okay, 5-6 years. So basically, the Fifth Amendment was put into the Constitution when war was still fresh in our minds, and most of our founding fathers were basically, had they lost that war, would have been strung up for treason and hung and had their entrails taken out and burnt. Right?
Yeah, actually, that was pretty common. Magellan did that. He had a guy on his ship who mutinied, and he had him drawn and quartered, and the bits displayed hanging up from the mast of the ship for about a week to, as a reminder to the other members of the ship. So, yeah,
that must have
drawn
smelled
and quartered, yeah, being disemboweled, you know.
So
pretty
prevalent
back in the day.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, though, that they wrote this basically almost in a time of war. And then, you know, it wasn't a few years later that they were in another war. So, and they didn't wipe out the Fifth Amendment. So what I'm saying is, you know, this excuse that the Fifth Amendment has no bearing because we are at war with an undefined tactic of the enemy. Because, you know, terror is not a place, person, or thing. It's a concept. It's a tactic used by the actual enemy. But
who do we need to invade to win the war on hurricanes?
I believe that would be the Congo or possibly Cameroon, because that's where they originate. Don't give them any ideas, Tex. They might actually do. We got to fight the hurricanes over in Africa so we don't have to fight them here in Florida and in New Jersey.
the hurricane weapon that has been honed in the Congo really is the greatest threat to the United States, I think. I mean, those guys have perfected, you know, the rain dance, whatever they're doing out there that is sending these things our way, but we have got to put an end to this, people. Anyway, but yes, it's a war against a weapon or a tactic, and inherently one that can't be won, and by definition is without end. And if you look at dictatorships that are run in countries across the seas, they always declare an emergency, a state of emergency that exists, and then that state of emergency never ends because it's declared in such a broad way that the emergency doesn't end. So some have argued that having a war on terror, which really is a euphemism, is by definition a war that would never end, and therefore the United States would always be in a state of emergency for which special powers would always be needed because it's declared war against a tactic. The war on terror, of course, as we all know, or maybe some of us don't, is a euphemism because people didn't want to say that this is a war against Islamist extremists.
Muslim jihadists.
Yes.
That's why. Who in the hell ever goes to war and doesn't actually identify the enemy? Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, were we at war with, you know, German trade unionists? We went to war with Nazi Germany. I mean, we identified who it was. We said we're going to take down Hitler. I mean, you know, that's how you fight a war. It's just ridiculous.
Wait a minute. Does that mean we were at war with all Germans? Does that mean that all Germans are bad? We can't draw these types of distinctions. We have to have been in a war with German trade unionism. Otherwise, we would think that all Germans were our enemies. This is how stupid we've become as a country now. You can't state and identify clearly that you're in a war against Islamist extremists who want to bring about the next caliphate and who want to spread Islam all over the world by, you know, force of arms if necessary, as in,
well,
you know, the glory
days. Say that, does that mean that you're at war with 1.2 billion Muslims? Or just,
yeah, exactly.
That fat fraction of them that wants to kill people.
Yeah. So you have to draw the distinction, but our government and our press is not willing to have that discussion because they, oh, my God, it's too inflammatory. That would make some people feel that, you know, feel bad about things. And it would sound like we're at a war with all people who are Muslim. No, it's your job as the press to make clear that that's not the case and to draw the distinction so that we, the American people, understand. But instead, in a complete abdication of your duty, you've decided to come up with this euphemism, actually it was come up with by the government. It's called the War on Terror. And so we have a war on terror. Terror, by the way, is the Latin word for planet Earth, which is sort of what we're engaged in. That's right. We are engaged
you're pronouncing
in a war.
It Texas style.
That's right. We're engaged in a war on terror. And basically, every place on planet Earth is being affected by this, even including here in the United States. And so the emergency powers extend all over the planet over a tactic. And so it's really, where does it end?
Where's Tom Mason when you need him?
Yeah, where does it end? And who's paying for this? Oh, crap, we are. With what
yeah.
money?
With paper money, plenty money, Bernanke money. No, but I think you're absolutely right that it's ludicrous to do this. And I think that, you know, identify the enemy. And there's nothing wrong with saying that it's Muslim jihadists because that does not apply to everybody. Go out there and fight them and do it right and do it quick and get it over with. But that's not the purpose. The purpose is, you know, either you let the you take advantage of an existing crisis or you fabricate one and then you implement these things. But what I was trying to say is that even under that circumstance, it's you, Mr. and Mrs. America, who allow it to happen, because Amendment 5 was written essentially right after we got out of a war, and there was no expectation that we wouldn't end up in another one. In fact, I'm pretty sure that Massachusetts was almost at war with New York. So the fact is that Amendment 5...
Is there a way that both of them could lose? Oh, sorry.
There is a way that both of them could lose, but we would not need to call up Texas, I guess. Let's face it. At this stage of the game, if it was New York versus Massachusetts, the victor would probably be New Jersey because, you know, at least Chris Christie's a fighter. I don't like him for too many other reasons. It would not be Mitt Romney. The fact is Amendment 5 stands always. It doesn't go away. And it is a civil right as an American. Now, if you are a foreigner who we have declared war against and you happen to be fighting against our troops, there is no Miranda right for you. You just get killed on the field of battle. But if you are an American and you are not currently engaged in an act that will result in the death of other people, even if you're collaborating with the enemy, we are to attempt to apprehend you, detain you, and give you a trial before we convict you of the crime, and you are innocent until presumed guilty. Now, before anybody says, oh, well, you know, it can't be like this extreme type, you always have to remember, whenever we accuse somebody, even if we are more or less certain that they are guilty, we have to respect the rules of the system because you could be the next person wrongfully accused. And
now,
if we bypass
the caveat, there is a caveat, like, as per the Civil War, if you actually have a rifle and you're running at our troops and firing at them, chances are you're probably on the other side, you know.
So, yeah, I think so.
So you know, at that point, we're like, hey, you know, let's get a jury over here. This guy, you know, is he serious? What's going on with this guy, you know? At that point, you know, it's pretty clear where your loyalties are and, you know, anything.
Sorry,
goes
you're dead.
Point, but, yeah.
You're dead.
Yeah.
You're dead. Look, it's real simple. And you know what? Rand Paul never questioned that. Ron Paul never questioned that. I don't think most people question that, okay? But we do question this, you know, secret program of drone assassinations based on this loosely defined affiliation with terrorists. I mean, you know, what's going to happen here? Remember something, right? There are several countries right now that have help centers, you know, for some American companies, you know, like Pakistan, India, Bangladesh. Now, I don't know if most people know this, but there's a significant population of Muslims in India, and Pakistan and Bangladesh are mostly Muslim. So if we call over there to get help installing our latest virus software, are we now affiliated with terrorists if any of those people perhaps have a cousin who one time drove a car into some installation and blew it up? I mean, where do you draw the line? You know, it's a very dangerous tool. And then, of course, terror or terrorist is undefined, or foreign combatant, right? Are you a foreign combatant if you happen to be going to the gun range with your Ron Paul sticker and your Don't Tread on Me flag? I mean, this is the kind of dangerous thing that can happen and has happened with governments in the past, including this one. Just ask people, I guess.
The example that you just gave, though, of someone driving to a gun range with a Gadsden flag and a Ron Paul sticker on their bumper is an absurd example, because that would never happen, because those are American symbols. Oh, wait. Didn't the Department of Homeland Security come out with an assessment a few years ago about what the greatest threat was to for domestic terrorism, and that's exactly what they said that it was?
Pro-lifers and the Fed. People who are generally anti-government. You know who's generally anti-government? The Founding Fathers. Those guys were pretty anti-government. I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's insane. It's insane. It's ridiculous. And the fact is that if we're willing to set aside the limitations on the federal government to exercise its monopoly on force.
Here it is.
Then
it says specifically that potential terrorists are, quote, liberty lovers, anyway, who are suspicious of centralized federal authority, reverent of individual liberty. Oh, yikes.
Oh, shoot.
But all I want to know is, you know, having worked for the government, who let this report get through the government? Who didn't shut this thing down? Like, this is a disaster. This is going to be horrible for our PR, our organization. But they let it through.
Had no effect, Dex. Had no effect. The media didn't report on it. It had no effect.
No?
No effect. People still don't believe it. I mean, this is a fact, people. This is a fact. This is a document that was circulated by DHS. I think it was first released by the Fusion Center in Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. And the media never reported on it. Most Americans are oblivious to it. But this is a fact. I mean, you know, you go back a few years, that would have been the definition of a patriot, text, not a terrorist. And don't give me this bullshit, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. No, it's not true. Okay, terrorists employ the tactic of terror and killing innocent people in order to elicit a political event. And that violates all the civilized rules of war, where you only engage in military targets and foreign armies to the extent possible. Obviously, there is some allowance for reasonable collateral damage if hostilities do have to occur. But you do not target civilians. And, you know, I think one of the first violators of that in modern times was probably General Sherman. And that would have, I think, a lot of people consider the War for Southern Independence or the War of Northern Aggression, or as the government school books call it, Civil War, possibly the first modern war. And General Sherman really was egregiously violating these rules by attacking civilians. But we don't label him a terrorist. So, you know, it's a very dangerous thing to do. And if you're willing to give up your liberties, your protection of liberties, remember, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are essentially, for the most part, negative documents. They spell out what the government cannot do. It limits the things it can do to a few enumerated powers. It's not supposed to do more than that. And if there's any ambiguity about it, the amendments clearly state that then the power is reserved to the states and to the people. Okay, we've got that inverted now, where everybody thinks that everything comes from the government and the government decides everything, and the Supreme Court of the federal government decides something that it's constitutional. Well, that's just not true, because the Supreme Court is a creature of the Constitution. Therefore, it cannot be the arbiter of the Constitution. It is created by the Constitution. It is the creators of the Constitution, or the ultimate arbiters on constitutionality, and those are the states. So that's the important thing to keep in mind. So what Rand Paul was doing, and by the way, just so in case anybody is wondering, when a senator filibusters, he doesn't necessarily have to speak the whole time. I mean, he's allowed certain pauses, but not longer than a minute. And he can have other senators ask questions as long as he doesn't end the filibuster. But he cannot sit down, and he cannot leave the floor. So Rand Paul stood there for nearly 13 hours doing this to protect your liberties. And if you would like to see it, we have all 13 hours in our Facebook group, Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia, and there's links for it in the chat on the Blog Talk Radio Show right now and also on our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show, so that you can really take a look at it. It is actually quite compelling. You'll be surprised how little nonsense there is, and that you will actually just find yourself getting a serious education on the Constitution. Unfortunately, most of Congress and the Senate were not present to hear this. They could have really used the lesson. Tex, we've got 20 minutes in the first hour, and then we'll open up the line. So if anybody wants to call in, 646-649-1013. What I found interesting, Tex, is the Twitter thing. You know, because, I mean, we know that Organizing for America and Obama have these hired bloggers and tweeters and all this shit. Even Romney, you know, hired people to try to combat that and failed miserably at it. And here's Rand Paul, without any intention of launching a hashtag or doing anything like that, and suddenly it's trending. And if you remember, what was that technology that Rove and Priebus and Romney came up with to defeat Organizing for America's power in the last election? You remember what that thing was called? Named after a fish, I think. Orca. That's what it was.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
They got nothing to be proud of. It was a massive failure, and they couldn't even really get anything going on Twitter. I remember Newt Gingrich had like 1.5 million followers on Twitter early in the primaries, and that just... Romney could never get anything like that because people just don't like him. So I thought it was incredible.
This is the difference between gaming the system and sorry, I was on mute. Actually, I was talking. But this is the difference between gaming the system and actually being the genuine article. If you're the genuine article, you actually get coverage because people are enthusiastic and there's real supporters behind it. Gaming the system, you just have a bunch of money and you go out and you hire people to tweet you. I believe back during the campaign, they found out that something like, I can't remember the exact statistic, but anywhere between 60-80% of Obama and Romney followers or Twitterators were fake accounts created by the campaigns themselves in order to puff up their rankings and some CNN news poll as to, the Washington Post did this, like, oh, who's getting the most tweets, right? And so they'd have, like, Romney and Obama down there, and there would always be, like, Ron Paul. The thing about Ron Paul tweets is those are actual people, whereas in the case of Romney and Obama, those were paid people who were, like, ghost accounts that were just blindly spamming out tweets. So the way that
you can't buy passion.
Yes, exactly, and that's what Romney tried to do from the beginning, and this is what the GOP's big mistake is. We know who our guy is going to be, and now we just need to make sure that everybody falls in line behind us. And so what we'll do is we'll make it seem like everyone's behind us with this fake passion, fake tweeting campaign, and then the media will cover it, and people will feel powerless to go vote for who they actually support, and they'll just fall in line, they'll vote for our guy. The problem is it doesn't actually work. And it's actually, I'll save this for when we get to another topic, considering some of the people who came up and filibustered in support of Rand.
Well, yeah. I mean, there were certainly some. I mean, I think he was there for at least 3 hours solo. And then he got some assists, chiefly, and the one who spoke, I think, just a little over an hour, but the only other person who spoke even of a serious volume was Ted Cruz, followed by Mike Lee, and then came the other taggers on, especially little Marco from Florida, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But
I just want to point out that Ted Cruz, as a Cuban-American, is someone who would greatly appeal to Hispanic and Latino voters that the GOP desperately wants to reach out to.
Apparently that's not true. Apparently if you're actually conservative, your ethnicity is no longer a point of appeal. It is only a point of appeal.
If you're a big rhino.
if you have no principles, no value, you're kind of an empty vessel, then your ethnicity or your gender is very important. But if you're actually conservative, that trumps everything else, your persona non grata everywhere. And that's what we see with Rand Paul. You know, you've got the, you know, quote, establishment conservatives who are denigrating him while trying to pander to the people who are inspired by him. That's the kind of crap that rhinos always do. They want to pander to you with the flowery words, and then they want to continue to govern as corporatists in no real difference than the Democrats. And you keep falling for it. And the way you can tell, and I got to say, maybe this isn't exactly where I was planning on going, but anyway, we're here. When Ted Cruz got up to speak with Rand, he spoke from the heart without script, and it was just flowing and real. When others, and I'm going to pick on Marco from Florida, got up there to speak, it was a sad attempt because I don't think that they really believe this stuff. Now, I'm not saying that Marco Rubio doesn't believe this stuff per se, but as a political creature, he realizes that he has to be an empty vessel so that he can move up in the ranks, where I see Ted Cruz and Rand Paul standing on principle, like it or not. But if you got a problem with the Fifth Amendment, there's plenty of other places in the world you can go where they don't have such a thing.
Well,
I'll buy your ticket one way. Get the hell out of here.
Since you've opened the barn door,
John McCain.
Yeah, since you've opened the barn door the rest of the way, I'll just say that, look, I think Marco Rubio, you know, probably overall a conservative guy, but he's handled. He's also very nervous about his place on the national stage, and he defers because he's eager, he's ambitious, so he defers to the leadership and what they want him to do because he wants to make sure that he stays in their good graces all the time, and therefore he allows them to put words in their mouth, in his mouth, and tell him what to do. And I always get that sense whenever Marco Rubio's doing, speaking, or saying anything. I mean, you notice that sip of water. It's not that he took a sip of water. How did he look while he was doing it? Guy looked nervous, you know, like he was afraid he was going to miss his mark. If he's afraid he's going to miss his mark, it's because he doesn't actually believe the things that he's saying, I think, or that he's trying to memorize what somebody else told him to say or phrase it properly. Yeah, Frank Luntz told him. But I think this is, you know, what they're trying to do is set up for you who the candidates are that are acceptable for 2016 presidential election. And I think, this is a postulate, that one of the reasons you hear such a universally unacceptable candidate like Jeb Bush come up over and over again, and I don't know a single Republican, not a single one that I've spoken to, who says that they think Jeb Bush should run or who thinks he would be a good choice. They universally are like,
Chris Wallace,
screw Jeb Bush, no way, what is this, a monarchy, is the common refrain, right? And I think the reason that his name keeps coming up is because it makes Marco Rubio seem less establishment by comparison. And so they give you the two choices, one of which is so unacceptable that you would never choose it, and the other one, which they completely and absolutely control, and so it doesn't matter at the end of the day which one that you choose because they still win. And so I think that's why you continue to see Jeb Bush's name come up in the hopper. Quick fun fact, since the 1920s, every Republican ticket that has ever won at the presidential level has done so with the name Richard Milhouse Nixon on it or George Bush. Yikes.
Okay. That's horrible, and now I'm in shock. Thank you very much for reminding us of the fact that it's Bushes and Dicks that are electing Republicans. Tex, here's an interesting thing. It looks to me that as they're pandering to the people that Rand Paul inspired with this Mr. Smith-esque filibuster, which I thought was just phenomenal content, they're seeking to put him in a box because he's proving to be dangerous. He seems to have the same midichlorians that Obi-Ron Kenobi has, except that Rand Paul seems to be a far more shrewd political animal than Ron Paul was. So it's almost like he's got the Obi-Ron Kenobi midichlorians. For those of you who haven't seen Star Wars, midichlorians are the active DNA things.
They're a bad idea that never should have been in the Star Wars universe. To begin.
Yeah, I know, but they're there. The Jedi's the ability to use the Force, and he seems to have the training from, you know, a master like Newt Gingrich, because he's as politically shrewd as Newt, and he's as constitutional as his dad. Now, I know pure libertarians and Ron Paul followers and Gary Johnson people will say, oh, he's not so pure, and of course, you know, comparing him to Newt Gingrich, oh, my God, that's horrible, he's a neocon. But the fact is that he is politically shrewd. I think that this filibuster came from the heart for a very specific reason, okay, but it was also a good political move, and I think that that's how you win in this horrible city. You have to stand on principle, but you have to be able to play the inside game, and I think Rand is just doing that phenomenally well. So well, in fact, that the maverick of the GOP and the, I don't know, hairdresser of the GOP both came out and really ripped into Rand on the floor of the Senate, and now everybody is pissed off at them. Would you like to hear from Senator John Get Off My Lawn McCain and Lindsey Lightness Loafers Graham?
Yes, I would. And then I'd like to comment.
Okay, two and a half minute clip here, and then you comment, and then two and a half minute clip, and I'm going to bring in our first guest, and then you comment. How's that sounding? Back on the other side of this, this is John McCain and Lindsey Graham responding to Rand Paul's filibuster.
But to somehow allege or infer that the President of the United States is going to kill somebody like Jane Fonda, or someone who disagrees with the policies, is a stretch of imagination, which is frankly ridiculous. Ridiculous. Carolina. I would ask my colleague from South Carolina, is there any way that the President of the United States could just randomly attack with a drone or a Hellfire missile someone without that person being designated a enemy combatant? And I don't think, as much as I hate to say it, that applies to Jane Fonda.
Well, thank you. That's a very good question. It's been a very lively debate. Senator Paul's got a lot of passion. That's a great thing. You can have all the passion you want. This is an important issue. We should be talking about it. I welcome a reasoned discussion. But to my Republican colleagues, I don't remember any of you coming down here suggesting that President Bush was going to kill anybody with a drone. You know? I don't even remember the harshest critics of the of President Bush on the Democratic side. They had a drone program back then. So what is it all of a sudden that this drone program has gotten every Republican so spun up? What are we up to here? People are astonished that President Obama, Senator McCain, is doing many of the things that President Bush did. I'm not astonished. I congratulate him for having the good judgment to understand we're at war. And to my party, I'm a bit disappointed that you no longer apparently think we're at war. Not Senator Paul. He's a man to himself. He has a view that I don't think is a Republican view. I think it's a legitimately held libertarian view. He's saying now that he wants this president to tell him that he will not use a drone to kill an American citizen sitting in a cafe having a cup of coffee, who is not a combatant. I find the question offensive. As much as I disagree with President Obama, much as I support past presidents, I do not believe that question deserves an answer.
I do not believe you, Senator, deserve re-election, and I find your entire behavior offensive.
Jesus Christ, did he actually say that?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Like someone mimicking his voice.
No, you don't need to mimic these guys. That's the thing. They give you so much real crap to go with. You don't have to mimic. Look, it's sort of like in the last election that, you know, that snarky libtard on MSLSD, Rachel Madcow, was doing some good reporting because she didn't have to lie about Mitt Romney to make him look bad. It's the same thing here. These guys give you this stuff. It's unbelievable. And I mean, we can we could do a whole show just on that comment right there. He's doing the same things as Bush did. Why aren't you complaining? I've been complaining all along. But, Tex, I'm going to let you comment because you said you wanted to. I just got a little fired up. But speaking of offensive, we've got somebody here who dwells from the nether regions and is very offensive. He carries a big club, and he's not afraid to use it. Trog, you are live with Tex and Rex.
Gentlemen.
Hey,
Tex,
Trog, how's it going?
Good. I'll let Tex go ahead.
Tex, rip into McCain and Graham.
Well, I heard Lindsey Graham, and now I've gone mad with rage. I forget what my original point was, but I'll just work it backwards and say that this is a question we shouldn't ask. What? Of course it's a question we should ask. It's like a complete question we should ask. Now, maybe the answer to the question, as I said earlier, should be, that's crazy, we would never do that. But then that should be the answer to the question. It's not something we shouldn't ask. We're like, hey, you know, I don't know, I'm reading this, and you could interpret it in such a way that you guys are allowing, you know, enough leeway so that you could do this. Is that what you're trying to do? Or could we rewrite this in a way that this would never even come up? So it's a question you absolutely should ask. It's also a question that deserves a real answer. And that answer is no. That's not something that we want to do. That's not the answer that you get. And therefore, you end up with a filibuster because they never answered the question because they would not, you know, stoop to give it a response. Well, it deserves a freaking response, man. And then second, this is something that nobody asked when Bush was president. Well, it's something people damn well should have been asking when Bush was president. And I seem to recall during the Bush administration, they were asking all sorts of questions that were all over the media and, you know, the blogosphere, and people were very concerned. They were comparing Bush to Hitler and his massive assumption of authority. So I remember people asking this question all the time. Now, maybe nobody on the Republican side was asking it, but maybe they should have been.
Ron Paul was asking.
Because, exactly. And these are the problems with allowing the president to have these types of powers. And this is the problem of factions, because if your faction is in control and it is assuming these powers, you're like, hey, that's good for my side. That's great, so I support it. Well, then, 4 years later, your faction's voted out and the next faction's in, and all those authorities that you gave to your side are now assumed by the other side, and now you're worried about them. Well, hey, moron, maybe you never should have given to your side in the first place, because it's not really your side, because you're not in control of anything. They are. The Washington establishment is, and you shouldn't be giving them more and more power, because eventually they're going to start using this stuff.
Well,
eventually?
And not eventually.
Really?
Sometimes,
I mean,
right
that sounds
now.
Crazy, Tex. But this is America. We wouldn't do anything like that. I mean, just ask any Japanese-American, German-American, Italian-American who's 70 years or older, you know, that the government is very benign and would never do any of this stuff, right?
Oh, of course. You know, history is replete with benign governments always acting in the public good, and governments never do anything bad. They're never a force of evil, or the driving force of evil in most of human history.
Trog, would you like to chime in on this? Or I guess, you know, having, you know, identifying ourselves as conservatives, and two-thirds of us, I think, at one point at least, being, quote, Republicans, we happen to have been around during the Reagan years, so I don't think that you would classify us as kids, I guess, like these, you know, libertarian kids. But I got to tell you something. I don't live in a college dorm, but I really like the fact that John McCain thinks that I'm a kid. And here's John McCain, and we'll go to Trog.
But if Mr. Paul wants to be taken seriously, he needs to do more than pull political stunts that fire up impressionable libertarian kids in their college dorm.
If you want to take it seriously, Rex, you don't go filibuster for 13 hours over government assumption of power to kill Americans without trial. You go across town and you have a fancy dinner with the president. That's how you get taken seriously. And talk about how you agree with everything that he's doing while you were fighting it, or rhetorically fighting it, until it was passed. Again, that's how you're taken seriously. All the differences are rhetorical. And then at the end of the day, everyone's a friend. We're all on the same side. And, hey, big up Washington, because we just got more power and screwed over the American people and took more sovereignty from them. That's the important thing. That's how you get taken seriously in Washington. But not questioning what's going on. I mean, my God, only people in college dorms ask questions. The rest of us just go along and rubber stamp everything. John McCain's built a career out of that. Wait, he hasn't. Hasn't he been a big maverick against the Republican establishment his entire career? Because he's been a collaborationist with the left. He's always a sellout, the Republican Party base, sellout the conservatives in order to get the deal with the Democrats. And how's that been working out for the country?
Chris?
We're inside the tent.
Chris, how's that working out?
Well, this is so much broader. I mean, the depth of this goes way beyond drones. And anybody who has done any research at, you know, since 9/11 and the war on terror in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Patriot Act and TSA and all the surveillance going on in this country, the lawsuits over cities having, you know, automatic ticket you cameras. I mean, all this, there's articles, I could pull up 1,000 articles right now on the overreach of government systems into our privacy, not just the idea of, can the government drop a bomb on me when I'm driving down the road? You know, that extreme. Let's just talk about all the sub-extremes. Let's talk about, you know, the FEMA situation. Let's talk about the fusion centers, the spy centers. People are freaked out about this stuff, and it goes, like I said, it goes beyond the dropping of a bomb on somebody. And Rand Paul, and you had to have watched the whole thing because it was extremely educational in between when he rambled or repeated himself, but he clarified himself, and in interviews that he did afterwards, he clarified himself over and over again. He goes, we're doing this crap. We're dropping bombs on people. We don't even know their names. We're just going, that caravan, somebody said there was a bad guy in it, so bam, goes 20 people. You know, it isn't targeted. We're pissing people off all over the world with our drone strikes. I think we're up to like 4,000, and I've seen the statistics on innocents and children. So we're already doing that in other countries. And I guess if you care about human life or civil rights, that would bother you because it isn't strategic. You know, and so there's a lot of questions about what we're doing in other countries. And I understand, you know, Rand Paul has treaded very, you know, softly on that issue, but he's going, we're doing it over there, and we want to make sure that we just don't start doing it over here. And I always, and it amazes me that people forget things like Waco, Texas, in 74. Human beings, including children, were killed in an overreach of government, okay? And you, there's many situations. You go to World War II, you go to the Japanese in the concentration camps that Reagan ended up apologizing, and they gave people money for the abuse of that. It goes on and on and on. So it isn't a question of has it been done before. It has. It's just the and Rand Paul's point is so good because he's drawn a line, and it isn't about drones. It's about civil liberties. It's about being spied on. All these
it's about the Republic. It's about the Republic.
Absolutely, and Chris. So, and one thing I would say, it's not just about whether or not the government thinks it can drop a bomb on you, you know, from a drone. What's really at play here is that the Rhino establishment is upset that Rand Paul dropped a bomb on them by stealing their press when they were at their dinner.
You know it.
Oh, nice shooting, Dick.
Yeah.
So someone dropped a bomb on someone. That, by the way, was the Gap Band. You dropped a bomb on me. I was trying to get the speakers there in case you couldn't hear it. But, yeah, so Rand dropped a bomb on the Rhino establishment with his filibuster that stole all their press about how they were the go-along-to-get-along party and that opposition had ceased. And the interesting thing is, and this is what I was going to say before the break, where we played those clips, is the interesting thing is this Lindsey Graham-John McCain rebuke to Rand Paul is not the first rebuke that the Tea Party and the Liberty Movement and the Libertarian wing of the Republican Party, which, by the way, has been part of the Republican Party for a very long time, has received from the establishment Republicans.
Right.
We also got this from our good old friend Karl Rove. And you know what happened to Karl Rove? He came back, hat in hand, tail between his legs, was like, hey, I wasn't really saying that. I mean, I think we're trying to get good people like Rand Paul. So he wrapped himself up in the mantle of Rand Paul. And now you see that John McCain and Lindsey Graham, they're getting the same type of treatment. And they're like, oh, hey, whoa, you know, I didn't know. So I think what's actually going on is that we're winning and that there is no groundswell of support for this revolt to the left on the part of the Republican Party. I think the Republican Party establishment has just exposed itself for what it is. It is blindingly obvious who they are, that they're Democrats within our midst and in our ranks, and that they want to see more Democrats, and they hate conservatives, and they don't want to have anything to do with it. And this,
I think
well, you know, is sorry, the beginning sorry. Of the political realignment that this country needs. Go ahead.
There was something that McCain said that was very important. He praised the crap out of Obama for furthering Bush's neocon tactics. That was in the interesting, and that was in that piece that you played. And that's very important to understand. And it is amazing to me how few Democrats and left-wing media, all these people who, you know, who posted death of American soldiers 24/7 while Bush was in power. Everything that Bush did from the Patriot Act, everything he did that attacked civil liberties, wire, you know, the warrantless wiretapping with a judge sign, you know, all that stuff. It was 24/7 every time Bush enacted another military-type oversight in this country on citizens and potential, you know, bad people.
Yeah, but Chris,
it's all
hype.
You hear nothing now. You hear nothing out there.
Yes, well, it's all hype. I mean, I really didn't want Romney to win. I really didn't want Obama to win either, but at least if Romney had won, maybe the left would be, you know, anti-war and pro-civil liberties again.
Oh, they'd be
although
screaming
some of them
24/7.
Some of them are coming around, though, you know, like John Cusack saying a few things about, you know, how come the Democrats weren't standing with him. There was a Democrat who did come and assist Paul with his filibuster for a few minutes. But, you know, but the thing is that the reason the left was attacking those things was because it was Bush, not because they fundamentally have a problem with those things. They're the biggest promoter of these things. I mean, when you're denigrating the waterboarding program, which actually causes no injury to anybody, it's a psychological effect to elicit somebody to put them in a condition where they might be more willing to give you information. It doesn't really hurt anybody at all. You know, everybody was up in arms about that. But if you want to drop a hellfire missile on somebody in America who happens to be an American citizen who has Fifth Amendment rights, well, you know, that's not worth discussing. I mean, it's sheer insanity. And the thing you have to understand is that this is the intricacies of duopoly. It fools the people on the left as much as those on the right. Yeah. But the fact is that the ones on the left who are supporting the Democrats, this is their game right now. They're ahead. And if the Republican Party, because let's face it, there are other parties, and locally you'd better get to know your politicians, your sheriff, and understand things and take a look at candidates who are genuinely conservative who might be in the Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, running as an independent. But on the national level, for the most part, and at least until those parties get more state legislatures and hopefully a governorship or two, the game is between the Democrats and the Republicans, at least for the next few cycles. So the Republicans are giving ground to the Democrats. We are now looking at an ascendancy of the left, and not just people who happen to have, quote, more liberal views. We are talking about a corporatist, Marxist machine that can only be stopped at the national level by the Republicans, and the Republicans are too busy beating the shit out of conservatives to pay attention to the Democrats, and therefore there is no shot. The only way you can make this happen, because remember something, these are creatures that need to win positions of power, even if they don't have total power. They want their chairmanships, they want their positions, they want their cushy Capitol Club seats, they want to be able to go to the old Epic Grill.
Yeah.
They cannot win without votes, and what happened in 2012 proved that. They forced Romney. He's the only electable candidate. You know, everybody's got to get behind Romney. Conservatives hate Obama so much that even though they don't really care for Romney, they'll still vote for him, and it didn't happen. We voted for other candidates, and your rhino lost, Carl. Your rhino lost, and now at CPAC you're trying to resurrect Romney 3.0 and bring him back. Why the hell are you bringing this guy back? Just confess to your mistake and shift gears, okay?
Yep.
I mean, you know, we will forgive but we won't forget, but quit spitting on us while, you know, your guy sucks and you're bringing him back. Romney 3.0, really? I mean, why is Romney at CPAC? It's sheer insanity. But the only way you can put this kind of pressure to bear on these people, and I'm talking about Fox News, Karl Rove, Lindsay Lightness, Loafers Graham, John Get Off My Lawn McCain, John Crying Tan Boehner, Little Prince, Clown Prince Pubic, all of these guys, the only thing you can bring to bear on them is to show them that the Stand With Rand Twitter event was not an aberration. It is the future. We have taken command of the high ground of technology. We are active at the grassroots level, and your arcane and ridiculous draconian rules from Tampa may technically shut down the grassroots movement of the party, but we won't turn out and vote for you. And 2014 will be a reverse 2010. You will lose the House. You will lose more seats in the Senate, and I suspect that Ted Cruz and Rand Paul got nothing to worry about. Even if Karl Rove comes after them, they will only get stronger, but you will lose.
Yep.
Lindsey Graham cannot be reelected. If you idiots reelect Lindsey Graham, you are basically saying, give us more of this crap. And the only way that happens is when people on the right start quibbling with each other and fighting over nitpicky little stupid things, when there is only one issue to think about. And Rand Paul talked about it for 13 hours, and it's really got nothing to do with drones. It's
That's
the
right.
Constitution. Okay, a republic, okay, comes from the Latin res publica. Okay, it's the rule of law. Okay, it's not a democracy. It isn't the rule of majority. It is the rule of law. And the law, the supreme temporal law, because the supreme law is always the natural law, but the supreme temporal law, the positive law in this country, is the U.S. Constitution. If your party, your candidate, your faction, your state does not abide by the Constitution, they are invalid, and we as free, sovereign American citizens have the right to repudiate that and remove them. Hopefully not by force, but the reason we have a Second Amendment is because if it comes down to it, we'll do it by force. But there are people like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz standing up there saying, no, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. We're going to operate within these bounds. We're going to hold everybody else who's up here with us to account. You have to make it clear that that's what you're looking for. So don't sit there and beat up fellow conservatives or, quote, libertarians or conservatarians or whatever the friggin' label you want to give anybody is. Anybody who's basically standing against collectivism, Marxism, corporatism on the left has to work together. If you don't, the other guys have already won. And it doesn't matter who you like, who you don't like, whether they run another friggin' Bush or rerun Romney or resurrect McCain from the dead, because I'm pretty sure that guy's a zombie. It doesn't matter, okay? It will go nowhere unless you are united. And I see it all the time on Facebook, Twitter, in person, people just quibbling with other conservatives about the stupidest crap. Ron Paul's foreign policy is so lax that terrorists will kill us. Well, guess what? Ron Paul, he ain't running for anything. He's retired. So quit talking about it. Well, Rand Paul is Ron Paul's son. No shit. Biologically, I'm sure that that's true. And philosophically, they seem to be in large agreement on most things. What do you want to argue about? You want to argue about the fact that if there are Muslim jihadists trying to kill us, that we shouldn't kill them? No one says that. If they're trying to kill us, we should kill them. Do you take out American citizens without due process indiscriminately in that process? Hell no, because if you're going to defeat the terrorists that way, what have you won? What have you won?
But if you're in government, you'd say hell yeah, because you're like, the American people are so compliant. If anybody mentions, like, hey, I think this is a bad idea, we'll just paint them as a kook, and then everybody else will be like, oh, I don't want to be a kook, so let's go ahead and give them this power. That's what you're dealing with.
Josh Tawley did a video, a few days ago. It was a gun rally video, and everybody needs to listen to that again because he talks about every one of the Bill of Rights and the fact that every one of them has been overturned to some degree or another. And he actually has a piece that he wrote where he walks down through each one of the Bill of Rights and describes how that's already been overturned. And it's pretty frightening. And that is what needs to be the coalescing point between all conservatives and libertarians. Got to get off this crap, off these little details. You know, I mean, Rand Paul can't do anything right. You hit it on the nail head, Rex. He did that. Well, he backed Romney. You know what? He backed the party. You know what I'm saying? And then you hear that. And then they go, they finally get over that, and then they attack him for, oh, he's too, you know, he's Ron Paul's son. And then he talks about the fact that he's, you know, he goes to Israel. Then they beat him up on that. I mean, the guy can't do anything right. And what it is a bunch of idiots that will never have a perfect candidate. Ron Paul was not a perfect candidate. You know, he had some great points that I agree on. He had other things that I don't agree on. You know, but he had a foundational principle. That's what pulled people together. And you have to look at that. Do you believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights? Yes. Do you feel that they've been abused? Yeah. Okay, we're partners. Get off the little crap. That's what people need to do is get their heads out. And these third parties need to be part of helping us fight for the decent guys, and they're trying to do a good job, the Cruises or the Pauls or even Rubio in his own soft way trying to figure out who he is. You know, if they do good work, if they're doing good work and they're fighting for your freedoms, damn it, people, unless you can get somebody in there to replace them right now or in 2014, they're what we have. They need our support. People need to get off of this crap. It is so exhausting. And all it is a losing strategy. It's going
John
to lose
McCain
our
and his allies.
You
John
know?
McCain and his allies would sell you out at the drop of a hat, and they've tried to multiple times. The only thing that ever stops them is when you get up off your ass and you go show some actual resistance, and then he's all apologetic and, oh, that's not what I meant. I was never talking about any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, well, you certainly were until you encountered some opposition. Somebody said, hey, that sounds like bullshit to me. He's like, well, yeah, that's total bullshit. I was never for that. That's the problem with John McCain and Lindsey Graham.
Isn't McCain the one that was running around all over the place, including on Fox, saying how we needed to make sure we sent that $1 billion to the Egyptian army because, you know, after the revolution and all that crap? I mean, this guy is out there.
McCain pretty much loves any program that'll cause war. that's
he loves
stick.
War.
You know
and
what?
He
a,
loves
if
it.
There's no war, he'll create one.
He's a true Democrat neocon, the original terminology.
And look, let's
Democrat
be clear about
neocon.
Something. You know, McCain, you know, served his country honorably. He was a prisoner of war. All that stuff he did, you can't take that away from him. But I got to tell you something. As a senator, he sucks.
He sucks.
That doesn't denigrate it for any of the good things that he's done. But as a senator, he not only sucks, he's dangerous. And Arizona, you had better retire the son of a bitch along with his little girlfriend, Lindsey Graham, from South Carolina. Is it South Carolina? Whatever. Anyway, retire them. Retire the rhinos. Now, here's the deal. I got a clip from a conservative juggernaut. Unfortunately, it's on Fox News with that moronic cheerleader Hannity, but it's still Newt that I'd like to play. But first, we've had somebody on hold a little while. We can bring them on because we only got 42 minutes of airtime left. 541, you are live with Tex and Rex and Chris. Welcome. Who are you and what's on your mind about the CPAC and the filibuster? 541. I got two 541, so let's try this one. All right, 541, you're live with Tex and Rex. Nope.
Hi, guys. This is Susie from Making Friends with Ron Paul.
Oh, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
In.
Hey,
Susie. Hi, you guys are doing a great show.
Well, thank you. Would you like to add anything to it, or you just want to listen?
Well, you know, I'm really glad that you guys brought up the Rubio point, because I've been trying to get the message out for the last few days, because I'm running into conservative pages, like on Facebook, on the news, all the media. You know, they're giving all this high praise to Rubio, when what he did was gave a good show and then turned around and voted for Brennan. To me, that's just a slap in the face to Rand, Ted, and Mike Lee, which Mike Lee he hasn't got a lot of praise, and he did a great job.
He was awesome. Yeah,
he was awesome.
Yeah, Mike Lee did a great job. That cruise missile that Rand launched did a great job. And the crazy thing is, Rubio is their little Cuban darling. He's their Hispanic outreach rhino. And the thing is that, you know, Ted Cruz is as Cuban as Marco Rubio. There's a difference, though. Ted Cruz is actually conservative. He can speak it and vote it off the cuff. Rubio needs to check his Frank Luntz playlist before he opens his mouth or, you know, drink some water. But I think that's a very good point.
Thank God for Ted Cruz, because it proves the absurdity of the establishment and it proves them all liars once again, transparently. They don't say Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz are great because they're Cuban Americans and so we want them in the leadership because they will appeal to the Latino vote. They only say that about Marco Rubio because they don't like Ted Cruz because he's a conservative. So it just goes to show that the leadership is not conservative and they are ostensibly leader of the conservative party, which means that these aren't your leadership. These are parasites that have attached themselves to the party and have taken over the host and think that they can control the organism, and that is the problem. And so you need to, you know, slough them off and get them out of here, relegate them to minor roles or get them out of the party altogether, and then move on to the real conservative party or a liberty-minded party, because I really think that what we've identified with the false left-right paradigm and the most important paradigm being between centralized government and decentralized government, that there is a third party or a second party waiting in the wings organized around liberty and limited government, yep, that is crying out on both the right and left to be represented. And the two parties, the two established parties, have exposed themselves to be statist parties that are controlled by statist organizations, they're losing favor rapidly, and they don't speak for the American people.
Right. Well, yeah, I am also, I'm a primary committee person here, and I worked with the Ron Paul campaign here in my state to get delegates elected to the RNC last August. So, yeah, we all know very well about the establishment Republicans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what they did in the state conventions and caucuses and what they did in Tampa is just unconscionable. Now, you know, there is a significant temptation to burn the house down for that kind of behavior. But like I said, the alternate parties are certainly making a splash. And we've got the vice chair of the Constitution Party coming up next. But again, until more Americans wake up on the national level because of the corporatist media and this insidious duopoly, the Republican Party is the only bulwark we have against total Democrat dominance. And so people have to really fight for it on a national level. Locally, all bets are off. If you can find a Libertarian or a Constitution Party or Independent or a Green Party, I don't care what party, if you can find somebody who's for the Constitution on the local level who isn't a Republican, screw them. But nationally, it's not going to happen. I mean, we got to be realists. So we appreciate your hard work, and thank you for calling in. I'm going to go ahead and mute everybody's mic. I'm going to play this clip of Speaker Newt Gingrich talking about the filibuster. Newt is a phenomenal Republican strategist, so listening to him and his assessment, whether you like him or not, is not the point. Just listen to his assessment of what Rand is doing and just try to ignore that moronic cheerleader Hannity.
Joining me now with reaction, former Speaker of the House, former presidential candidate Newt Gingrich. Mr. Speaker, you know, you've been urging Republicans to engage. Is this engagement?
This is a terrific performance of leadership, of courage, of stamina, of determination on the part of Senator Rand Paul. He performed two very important services. First, on the immediate question, he got the administration to admit that the president really doesn't have the authority to kill Americans outside of combat in the United States. So it's a very important thing to put to rest. And if there's any doubt about it left, Congress should pass a law making it definitive. Clearly, as Commander-in-Chief, at a moment of national crisis, he could authorize something in order to avoid a disaster. But short of that, the bias should be overwhelmingly in favor of protecting the legal rights of American citizens. Second, though, Rand Paul gave us a case study in what courageous, energetic leadership can be, that every member could exercise, both in the House and the Senate. You don't have to wait around for groupthink and the leadership to tell you what to do. You can get up and you can change things. And I was very pleased last night that Mitch McConnell, late in this long filibuster, came to the floor as the leader to commend his colleague from Kentucky. I thought it was exactly the right gesture. I think we need more Rand Pauls. We need more people willing to get up and do what they think is right. And I think that we would be a lot further down the road towards hemming in this president if we had more people willing to do that.
You know, there were four stars that are emerging. And I remember this young, kind of bold, brash congressman from Georgia who had a series that he put together called Renewing American Civilization, which ultimately led to Republicans taking over the Congress for the first time in 40 years. But between Rand and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, Ron Johnson, Tim Scott of South Carolina, all participated last night. I think we've got a young, dynamic block of conservatives that are showing not only that they'll stand up for what's good for the country, but it seems to me that that's good for them politically as well. Is there
something to learn here?
No.
Look, Sean, much more important than politics. I hope the House and Senate leadership in the Republican Party will take a lesson from yesterday. I hope they will encourage the Rand Pauls, encourage the Mike Burgesses, for example, in the House, or the Louie Gohmerts. Encourage the people who are willing to get up and take a risk and do something. They're not always going to be right, but their willingness to fight for what they believe in really is what makes a difference in once again creating a grassroots movement that can take this country back and move us back to a constitutional republic.
Yeah, and he did talk about shredding the Constitution. The original letter from Eric Holder to Rand Paul left the door wide open. If an emergency arises, I'll examine the particular facts and circumstances before advising the president. He wouldn't say unequivocally, no. I was pretty disappointed in John McCain. I want to show you that John McCain didn't excoriate Eric Holder, he went after Rand Paul. Watch this.
I don't think that what happened yesterday is helpful to the American people. To allege that the United States of America, our government, would drop a drone Hellfire missile on Jane Fonda, that brings the conversation from a serious discussion about U.S. policy to the realm of the ridiculous.
Very misguided to me. He should have been questioning Eric Holder and why Eric Holder didn't say flatly what he eventually said today. No. The answer is no, you can't do it.
Well, you know, what I find sad about Senator McCain's recent comments, both to Ted Cruz, when Ted Cruz was frankly raising legitimate questions, and again yesterday with Rand Paul, is, you know, when I first knew John McCain in the House, he was a maverick. In the Senate for years, he was a maverick. Of everybody I know in the Senate, I don't know anybody who had a better record of bucking the leadership, doing what he thought mattered, marching to his own drummer. And I think that it's unfortunate, but I think, frankly, it doesn't hurt Ted Cruz, and it doesn't hurt Rand Paul. It hurts John McCain. The country's moving on. We're in a new era. People know that these are legitimate questions. And as you pointed out, when the Attorney General sends a letter up that implies the president has the right to kill Americans who are not engaged in combat. This is a very important distinction. If you're an American and you're engaged in fighting the United States, you're engaged in an act of treason, the president as commander-in-chief has every right to target you, as he did an American in Yemen, I think, 2 years ago. But if you're an American who might be vaguely, indirectly engaged in something, and then you have not been proven in a court of law, you're not an active combatant, you have every right to be protected under our Constitution, or the Constitution has no meaning.
Oh, there it is.
Amen.
He said a few, I mean, it was just excellent, but a great analysis. But I noticed he mentioned grassroots, and remember that Newt is in a position threading that needle so that he can manage little clown prince pubic. And so for all of you liberty-loving folks who think that Newt is a neocon establishment rhino, he's actually in there trying to manage an inside game to give the grassroots a voice. And it would be very helpful if we all stopped quibbling about his bad votes in the past, because he's got some that I don't like either, but he is the only one who managed to move this rhino behemoth towards the right with a liberal Democrat in the White House when he was Speaker, and he's trying to manage Priebus and Rove and all those other pricks now, and he was pulling no punches with these guys today. He also mentioned Louis Gohmert, and remember, Gohmert nominated Newt for Speaker against Boehner, and if the pussies in the House had any balls like Justin Amash and Rand Paul, it is entirely possible that John Boehner wouldn't be the Speaker giving all the money to Obama. Everything that you do not like about what Obama is doing can be hung around the neck of George Bush, Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, and now funded by John Boehner, okay? And Mitch McConnell, you know, is threading that needle to try to appeal to the constituency of the junior senator so he can get reelected, but he's about as rhinoceros as they come. So, you know, I'm going to throw it to Tex and then Chris, and then we've got the mild-mannered vice chair of the Constitution Party, Gunnery Sergeant Stufflebeam, coming on. So text to you and then Chris.
Well, I just say that Gingrich is correct, that, you know, here's John McCain, you know, Mr. I'm a maverick, check me out, look at how I'm bucking the system and the leadership, and then he doesn't like it too much when somebody steals his thunder and they become the maverick and they're the next generation. He's like, hey, wait a minute, that's my role, and showing my stripes is that I'm working with Obama, not bucking the system anymore. Now I'm part of the problem. So, you know, I think it's just a complete role reversal, and John McCain is absolutely in the wrong on this one. And, you know, once again, I think this guy's time his ship has sailed. And, you know, thank you for your service and your time in the Senate, but it's time for you to go. And a new generation of Republicans are coming in to the Congress to take over. Who are steering it in a new direction, and really I think that's the way to go. And screw the old guard.
Just to clarify, you said bucking the system for everybody out there.
Yeah, bucking. Yeah.
And the article that Newt referenced is called Pioneers of the Future and Prisoners of the Past. This man is a visionary, and he really gets it. So, you know, it's a good article to read. You can find it on both the Texan Rex show on Facebook. That's our page, and if you like that page, you'll get broadcast times in your news feed. And feel free to join the Texan Rex Liberty Militia on Facebook, where I post all these articles, including this one from Newt. Chris, to you, and then we're going to let Randy on.
You know, I think that remember when Robert and I took Newt's 23 questions and points when they were talking about reexamining what the RNC needed, the GOP needed to do, blah blah blah, and we broke that down. It took us a couple shows to do it, but I think that people who have not studied Newt's revolution when they took over the House and then got reelected as a majority, and they don't understand that part of Newt, then they don't get what Newt's saying today. And they don't understand how important it is, the role that he's playing in this dialogue right now in our country. I remember watching, I was actually going back and watching some, listening to some old clips on that revolution that he ran. And people who were there at the time saying Newt came in as a freshman, and he had lost a couple elections before he finally got elected into the House. And people were saying this guy was nuts. Back in the 80s, he was going, we can be a majority. Here's what we need to do. He was saying it back then. Then he spent 15 years of his life building that team across the nation and then got elected with record-breaking numbers, including new people signing up to vote, including Democrats who came over to vote to put the Republicans in control of the House. This guy understands how to do this stuff. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier in the show, is people need to start to get over your little issues you have with people and start looking at where the people are that can help us get this country back. Where is that Tea Party movement, and what is it going to take to bring people together to make that happen? Because it's happening next year, folks. That's my input.
Well, we appreciate that, and you know, sometimes we can get carried away talking about this stuff because it is extremely enervating. And when little dweebs like John McCain and Lindsey Light and his loafers, Graham, tell me to calm down or tell me to calm down by proxy by telling Senator Paul to calm down, the only response I have is, hell no, I won't calm down.
That's right.
And speaking of calm, Randy, you're live with Tex, Rex, and Chris.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Sir.
And I
hey, Randy, how's it going?
And I do use that term loosely.
Good. Excellent. Good. You're learning.
Well, you know, I make that comment quite frequently to anybody who refers to me as a gentleman. I'm like, yeah, are you sure you got the right person? But a couple of things that I wanted to make mention, and it was some things that, Rex, you had mentioned earlier on in the show. One of the things that I think needs to be somewhat understood is that, you know, this whole war on terrorism kind of stuff has been so unconstitutionally executed. It's just mind-boggling. And, you know, in 2003, Ron Paul sponsored a bill that was the called something to the regard of the Letters of Mark and Reprisal Bill of 2003. Now, this, the Letters of Mark and Reprisal, which is a constitutional element of being able to fight some battles, we didn't have to, quote, declaring war is not the only constitutional remedy that we have. We have what's called the issuing of Letters of Mark and Reprisal, and guess what? We fought the terrorists back in the day of Thomas Jefferson, and
that's right.
Oh, by the way, they happen to have been Islamic terrorists that were terrorizing the high seas, and we defeated them under the issuance of Letters of Mark and Reprisal. So there are constitutional methods by which we could execute a war and actually make a more effective impact on this particular issue. That's number one. Number two, you had talked about some of the definitions that the Department of Homeland Security had for of extremists/terrorists. And on my website, www.constitutionallycorrect.org, I have the lexicon of extremism that is issued by the Department of Homeland Security. And in that, some of the interesting parts about that is what they define. Like, for instance, I'm going to give you a couple of their definitions as specified in this lexicon. The Patriot Movement. Okay, the Patriot Movement. Is there anybody here on this radio show that doesn't consider themselves a patriot?
They're not allowed to speak on my airways if they're not.
Well, guess what? Here's the definition. A term used by right-wing extremists to link their beliefs to those commonly associated with the American Revolution. That's sentence number one. It gets better. The Patriot Movement primarily comprises violent anti-government groups such as militias and sovereign citizens. Now, here's the really good part. In parentheses down below, basically it's also C, or also known as, number one, Christian patriots. Number two, patriot group. And here's the best two of them all. Constitutionalists or constitutionists. These people are part of this patriot movement, and we are extremists. Now, the bizarre thing about this definition is they define us as commonly associating ourselves with the American Revolution. And is there anything that is not more American than the American Revolution? This is the lexicon, people, and this is, and they're defining us as terrorists, basically. Now, here's the other one. Right-wing extremism, a movement of right-wing groups or individuals who can be broadly, okay, not narrowly, broadly divided into those who are primarily hate-oriented. And of course, we know who the hate-oriented groups are because the Southern Poverty Law Center is the expert on who who are the hate groups. And, of course, Chris Matthews just defined the Constitution Party as one of those hate groups. And but it says, and those who are mainly anti-government and reject federal authority in favor of state or local authorities. Has anybody ever read the Founding Fathers of what where they believe has the premise of authority? And it goes on. It says, this term also may refer to right-wing extremist movements that are dedicated to a single issue, such as opposition to abortion or immigration. Come on, seriously? This, but I want to make a on this same kind of
well, it's criminalizing the opposition is the entire idea. This is done overseas. Oh, these people oppose me politically, therefore, you know, now they're the enemy, and we can go after them and go get them.
And the thing that happened in Missouri is separate of from this lexicon of extremism. What they did, the state police issued a report, and I wanted to call it a MEAC, a MEAC report, Missouri Intelligence Action something or another. Anyway, it was a report that was issued to all the state police that were told that Bob Barr, who was running for the Libertarians at the time, this was in 2008, Chuck Baldwin, who was running for president for the Constitution Party, and anybody that had Constitution Party or Libertarian stickers were to be considered extremists, and the state police were to do everything to watch them and to single them out and so on and so forth. And that was what happened in 2008. So two other points real quickly. When you talked about, you know, the drones and stuff, I remember during the presidential the Republican presidential debates, and the question was, should the president have the authority to assassinate citizens abroad? Okay, that was the first part. Now apparently we're okay with assassination of citizens abroad. So now we're going to narrow it down. Should the president be able to assassinate citizens on American soil? Okay, so we're defining who the American citizen is by virtue of their particular geographical location at that point in time, apparently. But I'll never forget that Romney said, absolutely the president ought to have this authority, and there's no way. And this is what he said, and I can pull up the sound bite. I don't have it
at
my finger, Andy. But he said the president would never violate that, or never abuse that power.
Well, that's because he was hoping he would have that power, because that moron actually thought he could be president. Randy, those are all great points. If you don't mind, could you post that link in chat so people there can get it and read it for themselves? But you bring up a very valid point. Yeah.
That one?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
Oh,
please.
Yeah, absolutely. And let me make one other quick, very quick point.
Sure, go for
it. You know, you were talking about declaring war. We can't declare war on terrorism. And yet, during this process of not being able to declare war because we cannot identify where the enemy is because it's an idea and not a location, we invaded a sovereign country, a sovereign nation known as Iraq. We went in there, toppled their government, destroyed their government, invaded and occupied a country without a declaration of war. And that's the last point I need to make.
All right. Thank you, Randy. And on that last point, I will say that I'm very disappointed that we haven't formally declared war since, I believe it's 1942 or when we declared war against Bulgaria. But, you know, the question of whether we should or shouldn't have invaded Iraq and all that stuff, that's a debate that I wish we'd had more vigorous conversation on, but we didn't. And it's a done deal. But the simple fact is, we don't need to remain there or in Afghanistan and keep bases that we cannot afford. And that is a very important thing to point out from a practical fiscal standpoint. We cannot maintain these wars, and they make us less safe now, no matter whether they were legitimate to begin with or not. It's gotten to the point of ridiculousness. Furthermore, this tendency to stretch the force so thin that you could actually break the force puts you in a position where you will be prone to possible invasion, which is something that we've never really considered, and also the old tenet that tyranny at home always begins as tyranny abroad is what you're seeing now. You know, like Randy just pointed out, we were having a discussion about whether you should be able to kill people with the drones overseas. Now we're discussing about whether you can kill American citizens with drones domestically. And what got lost in the conversation, and I don't think that Rand Paul intended to lose it in the conversation, he was just focused, is with all this talk about Article Amendment 5, don't forget that it is still legal for them, even though it's illegal according to the Constitution and the U.S. Code, it is legal for them to violate our Amendment 4 using a drone. So, you know, don't lose your 360-degree view, because where they might give us a point, like they might concede to Rand Paul that, no, we won't kill Americans with a drone, but maybe we'll kill them with a cop. They haven't said that they won't spy on you with a drone. So, anyway, throw it to my co-host and then over to Chris.
Well, of course they'll continue to spy on you with whatever they want, because the right to privacy is basically gone, because we have technology that obviates it and makes it so easy to spy on you and everything that you do and know everything about everything that you do and want and like, that they're just going to scoop that right up, because the Constitution didn't think about that. That's one of the problems. Just because you have the technology doesn't mean that you should, and just because you've been using the technology and nothing bad has happened to you yet doesn't mean that nothing bad will happen to you in the future, and so you shouldn't give up all of these rights. But people do, because they're lazy. And, hey, I can save, 30 cents off of my deodorant if I tell my grocery store everything that I buy every day and with what frequency. If you ever lose a sense of who you are on planet Earth and you don't know, just go to your grocery store. They'll give you the five. They're like, it's okay. You like, barbecue beans and rice. You buy this type of shampoo. You buy it every 2.5 weeks. You come in. You get this stuff. They know exactly who you are.
It's an easy insurance.
Yeah, exactly. You turn this information over, as long as you can save, 50 cents on God only knows what it is that you buy, and then the government can get access to this information, because they go intimidate the organization that has access to it, and it's all turned over to the government, and then they know everything about you and where you go and all your buying habits and everything. And is that a good thing? I would submit not, given the history of governments and what they do. And if you have a government that doesn't feel that it is restrained by constitutional limitations, then you have a problem. If you have a government that is constrained by constitutional limitations, I would say that's no guarantee that everything's going to go smoothly, but you're certainly going to do a lot better off than one that just completely ignores it. And right now we seem to have people in power and a government that increasingly ignores it, and people in power who want to ignore it, and it's up to you to pay attention enough in order to maintain your liberties. And that, I think, is the crux of the modern-day problem with America today.
I think you're right, and let's not forget that in the reform after the last financial collapse, which apparently is over because we're in recovery, but all I can see is collapse all around, they created the Office of Consumer Financial Protection inside the privately owned Federal Reserve, that basically has access to all of your electronic transactions, stock trades, purchases, credit card transactions. They can create a forensic financial profile of you and determine whether you happen to be one of those anti-Fed, pro-Constitution, Christian, conservative, Ayn Rand, Rothbardian, whatever. When you buy that thing from Amazon, they know about it. They know that you picked up Case Against the Fed by Murray Rothbard, Human Action by Mises, Economics in One Lesson by Hazlitt, the Federalist Papers, and all sorts of other subversive literature. You will end up on that list, and then tyranny can ensue. So, you got to be careful, and you got to identify the enemy. But don't be afraid. That's the thing. They want you to be afraid. And believe it or not, they don't only control the mainstream corporatist media. They also have tentacles in the so-called alternate media designed to hype you up, freak you out, and get you to cower in fear over the coming New World Order. Okay? Is there a New World Order? Are they trying to institute global financial and political control? Yes, of course they are. They've been trying to do that since Cain killed Abel. But to be afraid is when you lose. So you got to take courage and identify the right enemy. You know, I hate to break it to most of you because you love to beat up on Obama. Believe me, I love beating up on Obama too. But he's not really the problem. He's just the current puppet. The real problem is the enemy within, the wolves in sheep's clothing. Obama is easy to identify as a problem. He's obviously a, you know, corporatist, communist, Marxist dictator wannabe, okay? But what about Karl Rove, Rince Priebus, John McCain, Lindsey Lightness Loafers Graham, and that other useless piece of beef jerky, John Boehner? Those are the real enemy. Those are the real problem, because those are the guys that are standing in your way from defeating and crushing Obama, the left, and the so-called New World Order. So look to your own house, and whether you're a Republican or not, if you're a conservative on the federal level, that's the brand, and you need to reclaim it. Chris, to you.
Boy, you nailed it right there. I've been going back through, I've saved a lot of my posts through this last primary, and I've been going back through cleaning stuff up, deleting stuff, keeping different things. And I can say that through the whole primary, while everybody was Obama this, Obama that, Obama this, I was Boehner this, Boehner that, Bush this, Bush that. I mean, I, you know, and it was amazing to me because it was so obvious, you know, that there was no difference, that Obama is not the problem. He is a symptom of the disease. You know, this goes, everything that we're freaking out about, and if you go on to, you know, half a dozen Facebook groups and read all the, you know, the terror posts, you know, about New World Order and everything else, and you read this stuff, you just go, all this is an extension of all the Bush policies. He consolidated the War Powers Act, he consolidated FEMA, he consolidated all of it, you know. Come on, folks. This is not difficult to understand. Of course, you know, if you go back through history all the way, you know, even in the Civil War, you know, they abused the Constitution back then. You know, the thing is do people get it back? Do they fight back against it? This is the first time that we've had an ongoing war with no start, no end, no defined enemy, no country that we're at war with, including our own land. I mean, this is the first time they've taken it this to this degree, and that is what I believe Rand Paul was saying without trying to sound like a conspiracy theorist on the floor of the Senate. And I think it's a very, very important discussion. I just think that what he did was he opened the doorway for people to rationally discuss these issues, because this is – we're going to continue down this path, or we're going to reverse this path. We're going to start defining what this war on terror is and how it functions inside our country. Or we're not, and just kiss it all goodbye, because it will be totalitarianism. That's my
opinion. Yeah, I mean, totalitarianism is always the game, and liberty and tyranny are always in conflict. We're handed a federalist structure with significant checks and balances that we've been able to stem it for a long time, and so we grew soft and apathetic and lazy and were distracted by bread and circuses. Well, that's over with. You know, maybe the final end game hasn't commenced. Maybe the total economic collapse hasn't come to its full fruition, although we're in the midst of it. But you know, wake up. It's time. It's past time to do something about it. We've got about 7 minutes of live time left. We're going to try to wrap it up, but we'll probably go slightly in overtime. If you want to listen live, you need to call in. I will not be bringing on any more callers, but call in 646-649-1013, and you can continue to hear the show. Otherwise, please check us out in archives on the Tex and Rex Show page on Blog Talk Radio. It lists every show we've ever broadcast, and you can listen to it in your browser or your mobile device, or you can download an MP3. So please check that out and take a look and like our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show page on Facebook, and you will get links in your news feed when we're broadcasting and such. So in order to kind of bring it on home, I'm going to throw it to the mild-mannered vice chair of the Constitution Party for his final thoughts, and then we'll bring it on home. Randy, to you.
Hey, gentlemen, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate all that you are doing. And, you know, one of the interesting things is, and even here specifically in Illinois, because how you guys were focusing on the national scene with Rince Pubic and all that's going on, we've got an even worse commodity here in the Republican Party as the chairman for the Illinois Republican Party, Pat Brady. And I mean, they've even called special meetings to try to fire this guy, and it just seems like it's just not happening. You know, is the Constitution Party there? You guys have made the point that you know, we're not there yet, and I agree, we're not there yet. But we certainly need people who are awake and are aware of the circumstances that we find ourselves across this nation. And, you know, we tread a very difficult line here. You make some very good and valid points about, you know, supporting people who support our Constitution. Now, certainly Rand Paul is probably, I don't know of anybody that's even remotely more constitutional than Rand Paul. So while I've certainly got some issues with him, you know, for the Republican Party, you know, we don't have anybody that could touch him. And so, you know, would we support Rand Paul? Well, you know, yes, we would, but not in terms of, you know, the party is going to nationally endorse Rand Paul, because supporting Rand Paul, in essence, and this is the beef that I had with his father, Ron Paul, is supporting Ron Paul has a certain effect of keeping the Republican Party in power. As long as we can continue to support the people in power, we keep them, the Republican Party in power. So, I mean, there's a difficult line that we have to tread, and, you know, trying to do this in saving our country, keeping at least some constitutional point within our nation is so difficult, and yet try to build a party that will stand against this two-party duopoly. So, you know, we've got a tough row to hoe, but we're here to hoe it, because to do otherwise, we would allow this country to just continue to drift down the eternal rabbit hole and to the abyss. So, again, just want to tell you, I really appreciate you guys allowing me to be on here, throwing out some of my rants. But you know what? I know that we all are patriots. We all love our country, and I am willing to work with anybody who is willing to work to save our nation. So God bless you all. And
all right. Thank you very much, Randy. We appreciate that. And from one patriot or terrorist, depending on the homeland defense definition, to another, we appreciate you. And if you could quickly just tell people where they could get in touch with the Constitution Party so that they can find local candidates who might be able to displace local rhinos so that, you know, we can build up conservatism from a constitutional grassroots level up, even outside of the Republican Party. So where can they find their local Constitution people?
The best place to get started is to go to constitutionparty.com, and on there is a map where they can click on it, go to their state, find their point of contact, contact the state chairman, who will put you in contact with a county. And if there's not a county and you're interested in getting involved, we're looking for people who will stand up at least to become a point of contact for their county organization, if not, you know, to even become the chairman to help us get these, especially at the county level. We are looking to organize at the county level. It's the county level that's going to start developing the level of organization we need to get, overcome the large number of signatures to recruit candidates and all of that. So the starting place is constitutionparty.com. And if for some reason you don't hear anything, get in contact with me. My contact information is there as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Randy, and keep up the good fight. Chris, we're going to you. Chris from Coalition of Freedom on Facebook and Blog Talk Radio. Go for it.
Gentlemen, I say that lightly. I think that I really like what Rand Paul did, and the reason I like it is because it was, he just stepped out. It wasn't scripted. He knew that it's very difficult to get control the floor. You know, he's talked about that in follow-up interviews. And he took a stand. And that is what's important, because it isn't so much about Rand Paul. I know that, you know, everybody is always looking for that hero. But it's the fact that he took a stand, because he took a stand with some other people, too. You know, Mike Lee and Cruz, and even Rubio was there, and a couple other guys. But to me, it was like the Second Amendment issue. And this is an equally important issue, because they're attacking all of our freedoms, our liberties, and our rights. And that's an important to understand, because, you know, Feinstein has her way. All military people are going to be labeled unfit to have guns and have to prove their mental ability or right to be able to bear arms in this country. I mean, these people are not going to stop. And the only reason that we've come to this point is too many good people quit fighting the good fight. And now everybody's freaked out. Well, you got to fight for this stuff, folks. It's your country. It's my input. I'm done.
Excellent. Well, I'll just pick up there, Chris. This is Tex, and just say that so this week's drawing to a close. We had the filibuster, which I think was excellent and certainly raised awareness around the issue that maybe a lot of people weren't aware of. I think across the nation, a lot of people hadn't heard about this because of mainstream media, or, I mean, forget mainstream media. That's become like the conservative phrase for the national media. Or for the left-wing media, when in reality, the national media, I think, didn't really cover this issue. So most people are too busy worried about themselves, and so they weren't aware of it. So I think it raised that issue. But now all eyes are going to turn towards CPAC and what's going on there. And CPAC is an organization that dates back to the 70s, and it nominated Ronald Reagan as their candidate of choice three times, back 76, 1980, and 84. And it used to meet about every 4 years around election time. Sometimes it would do off-year elections. Did so in 95 after the Gingrich Revolution that brought the Republicans a majority for the first time in decades. And now it has it meets every freaking year since, I believe, about 2005, 2006, something like that. It meets every single year now. And during that time, CPAC, which used to be a conservative organization that advanced conservative principles, and they were the Tea Party of the day. They were the, what would you call it, the fly in the ointment that the establishment did not like. Now the establishment, in true establishment fashion, has decided to co-opt them and change the message to be an establishment message. So I would just point out that CPAC has nominated Ronald Reagan three times, Jack Kemp three times, and it has nominated Mitt Romney four times. So, you know, I think this is an organization that has gone through organizational decline, and essentially it's done as a factor in American politics. And I think the fact that they did not invite Chris Christie was just to try to show some conservative bona fides, create some type of controversy in order to make them more edgy than they actually are, when in reality, at this point, CPAC is controlled behind the scenes by the money people, and there's a desperate need for a new and real organization that would fulfill the role that CPAC used to fill in a legitimate way that actually had the support of the grassroots. It wasn't just a forum for money people to go in and become puppet masters and pull the strings as to what's going on behind the scenes. So with that, I'll turn it over to Rex.
All right. Well, yeah, CPAC is here in Washington. Actually, it's physically in Maryland, but, you know, anyway, close enough.
So the Gaylord.
The Gaylord. March. I'm sure Lindsey Graham will be happy about that. March 14th through the 16th, you've got, rhinos galore, Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney 3.0 will be making his reappearance there. So if you feel like going out there to protest, please do. But you've also got some conservatives and conservatarians. Rand Paul will be speaking, Ted Cruz, Sarah Palin will be there. She's always a big draw, and it will actually be one of her first major public appearances since she severed ties with Fox News. So she might give a fairly interesting speech. Tonight's show, Contenders, Pretenders, and Conservatives, was pointing towards
CPAC, but an unexpected 13-hour filibuster by the junior senator from Kentucky kind of trumped the news, and I think that that was excellent. And I applaud Senator Paul and Senators Cruz and Mike Lee for supporting him. It was an awesome thing. We'll be back next Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, to talk a little bit about what we might glean from CPAC. It is the first bottleneck in the 2016 run, but don't forget, in Virginia and New Jersey, we've got major elections 2013. There's a special election in Massachusetts, I believe in Missouri and a couple of other states, so let's focus on those. And the 2014 midterms are going to be hugely important. As it stands right now, the Republican Party is poised to lose seats galore. And the only thing that will change it is if you, Mr. and Mrs. Conservative America, stand up and support actual conservatives wherever you can find them and let them know that you want more things like what Senator Paul did. It is a very, very important thing that he pointed out, because basically he was standing up to defend the Bill of Rights, which is what constrains the federal government from trampling on your natural God-given rights. And without that, the Constitution would have never been ratified, and we would have gone in a different direction. So it is not something to toy around with. And from what I understand, Brennan swore not on a Bible, but on a copy of the Constitution. Interestingly enough, when he took his oath of office, that copy of the Constitution was missing the first 10 amendments, otherwise known as the Bill of Rights to the Constitution, if that tells you something. Another major event globally that in some sense has an effect on politics that's coming up on Tuesday is that the cardinals of the Catholic Church are going to go into conclave to elect the next successor to St. Peter, now that Pope Benedict XVI has retired, Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. Why is that important? Well, for a lot of reasons, because most of our traditions of liberty are rooted in Christendom, which we now call Europe, and we got here after centuries of development in the cause of liberty brought to us through Christianity, whether you're a believer or not, that is a historic fact, and through British common law. So it's very important to understand where our heritage of liberty comes from to see where it can go. In fact, when we elect our president, we don't actually vote popularly for him. We vote for an elector in the Electoral College to go and elect the president. That idea was delivered to the Continental Congress through the state of Maryland, which was the first one of the colonies to have the official religion being Catholicism. And remember, back then, most of the states had an official state religion, hence why we have our First Amendment. It was also the first place in British America that actually passed laws of religious toleration. But the idea of the Electoral College comes from the College of Cardinals. So as we have 115 cardinal electors, not all cardinals can vote because of age restrictions, convening on Tuesday, it is a reminder of the long history and tradition of liberty that we have established, these bulwarks of expression, delegation, and balance of power with checks and balances both horizontal and vertical in order to prevent what is happening right now from happening, which is for corrupt men to have a private bank that controls our entire money supply and a corrupt duopoly that keeps electing different parties that have the same dastardly agenda both overseas and at home. It will not stop because one man got up to speak for 13 hours. Rand Paul cannot do it alone. He can't even do it with Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, or with help from people like Amash and Gohmert in the House, or from local representation in the states. It will take you. You have to be the loud voice crying in the wilderness. You have to band together and be louder than you have ever been, focused on the right enemy. And that is the enemy within the halls of your rights. It isn't the one on the other side that's an obvious enemy that they used to distract you with. It is the enemy within that you have to focus on, and you have to let them know, over and over again, and it is your responsibility, because you are aware of the tyranny and the rhinoism and the duopoly, to wake up the others who are asleep, because it's their country too. And if we fail, it is because we weren't loud enough. So you need to set aside your favorite pet issue. You need to set aside your favorite candidate, even if it happens to be someone who's doing the work like Rand Paul, and reach out to people on broad principles. The Constitution, federalism, diffusion of power, the individual sovereignty of each American citizen, that we give some of that power to our states and commonwealths, and they give some of that power to the federal government. But it is clearly delineated and enumerated, and anything that steps out of those bounds is to be put down as tyrannical, even if at that moment it is not being used for tyranny. It is destroying the structure that has kept tyranny at bay. And if you give a little now, you will never have anything in the future, and you owe it to your children's children's children to pass on liberty to them. But what you're doing is allowing these bastards to pass on nothing but debt slavery to them. So stand up. Be loud. Learn about the Constitution. Watch all 13 hours of Rand Paul's filibuster. He teaches you a lot. And don't tell me, oh, my goodness, that's too much. The average American watches over 12 hours of television in 4 days. You can catch it in 1 week. Just do 2 hours a night. It is far more worthwhile than watching O'Reilly bloviate about some bullshit or listening to Rush Limbaugh ditto head you into oblivion, okay? So pay attention and wake up, and we appreciate you being here. We appreciate you sharing the show, and we look forward to seeing you next week so that we can continue the discussion about how to move the ball in the right direction. This is Texan Rex signing off.
Flames of Liberty will never die.